Trae Young recorded his first 40-point playoff game, putting up 48 points. That ties LeBron James for the most by a player age 22 or younger in a conference or division finals game. Young and the Hawks are now 6-2 on the road this season. Trae is averaging over 32 points per game on the road in these playoffs. And Young has been on fire to open up each series. He's averaging over 38 points in game ones this postseason. That's the highest scoring average in game ones by any player in NBA history. Ice Trae, you know what it is. Stephen A. Smith, what was the biggest reason for last night's result?
It was Trae. It was Trae being sensational. You see, people are looking at his points, and I'm saying look at how he scores, which is why I said he was the key to this series, Max, when we had this debate yesterday. I was talking about him. See, he shot 4-13 from three-point range. That's not how he's going to kill you, even though he just embarrassed Drew Holiday, just took him completely out of the camera, shimmied, and then shot a J and hit all net, had Giannis in the timeout pointing out how he shimmied on them and all of that stuff, which is very, very embarrassing to the Milwaukee Bucks. But with all of that aside, let's pay attention to what you're seeing from Trae Young right now. The ball handling skills, the passing skills, the decision making, the ability to draw fouls, the cat quickness where he can shoot floaters from 5 feet, 10 feet. I saw him shoot a 15-foot floater. This is what he does. And he's constantly got defenses on their heels because he has them scared he's going to draw fouls, because he can stop on a dime and let you run into him. And because he's only 6'1 and about 175, 180, he'll go bowling over. Obviously, he'll draw the foul from the officials, and you find yourself on the bench ill-equipped to defend him because that's what he does. He's got Brook Lopez showing that he has no business on the basketball court in this series, because you continuously put him in pick and roll situations. You force him to either come out and get you, which Brook Lopez ain't gonna do, which leaves you open for a J, or if he steps a foot away from the basket and even faints coming at you, it's grounds for an alley-oop to Capella or John Collins. It's what he's doing and how he's doing it that's really resonating, because he's not just putting up points. He's getting other people in trouble and compromising what they can do because of foul trouble. And he's also making Budenholzer having to figure out, how the hell am I going to defend him? The Milwaukee Bucks, because of one game, already know Brook Lopez can't be on the floor. We got to go small. We probably going to have to put Giannis at the five. We're going to have to put Portis up in there. And we're going to have to go small. This is what we're going to have to do in order to compete against this guy. And by going small, that's going to unleash Collins, who can play at 23-15, and Capella, who had 19 rebounds. That's going to unleash them at the rim. All because of how Trae Young scores his points and generates points for that offense. That's the difference, and that's why that's the biggest reason for the game one result.
He makes Brook Lopez unplayable.
Right.
He was great. That's good analysis. And by the way, this whole playoff, Stephen A., my big thought after last night's game is I can't remember a season where there was this much change in the NBA hierarchy. Like, we're going to have to consider Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker, and Trae Young when this is all over and figure out who's in the top 10 in the NBA and who's not. Because there are some names that are
they're all superstars right now.
Superstars. And I feel bad for Jamal Murray that he missed out on the party, because in last year's playoffs, he was spectacular.
Yes, no question.
So, that was my big takeaway. You're right. It's Trae Young's story. But I want to focus on why the Bucks lost, other than Trae Young is on the other team.
Okay.
And that's Chris Middleton. 0-for-9 from 3. 15 points in 41 minutes. Stephen A., I'm not even knocking Middleton and Drew Holiday. They're good players. But I'm so sick and tired of – I was on Milwaukee radio the other day, Stephen A., and they were asking me about the big
–
There's no big three in Milwaukee. What do I keep saying? There's a big one. The reason I like the Bucks to win this series heading in was okay. But since the other team doesn't have a big three anymore, you're not playing Brooklyn. There's no Kyrie or James Harden. There wasn't for Brooklyn either. But now, you know what? When you take away the superstars on either team, you have Trae Young and Giannis, the best players on the Bucks. It's Middleton. And maybe the next guy's also on the Bucks, and Drew Holiday, you could argue. And so maybe they have a version of a big three when the other team doesn't have one. right? But they don't, Stephen A. The reason Middleton is not good enough and neither is Jrue Holiday to be considered members of a big three is because they're sometimes all-stars. I think Holiday's made one team in his career, Middleton two. They played a while. And the reason for that is they're sometimes great and usually good and sometimes not so good. You know, they're not always great. This is not Kyrie Irving or someone like that. There's a difference between a perennial all-star, they make the team every year because most nights they're really great, and a once-in-a-while all-star. And Middleton's a once-in-a-while guy. So when he shows up the way he does sometimes, the Bucks are going to win those games. That you got Giannis and Middleton and Jrue Holiday. But there are going to be nights where he doesn't. And that was one of those nights. They can't win a game if Middleton's going 0-for-9 from 3. Ain't going to happen. And that's what happened last night. Holiday shows up, Middleton goes away. Middleton shows up, Holiday goes away. They got to both show up.
First of all, that's an accurate analysis, and I'm not disagreeing with you on its face value in terms of them both not showing up. But you're just talking offensively. I saw Jrue Holiday shoot the ball effectively yesterday. I give him props for that. He shot 25 times just like Giannis did. But last time I checked, Jrue Holiday is an all-NBA defensive team player.
Yep.
First team. Where the hell were you when Trae Young was scorching y'all? What the hell were you doing? You know, because we saw Jrue Holiday reaching a lot. We saw Trae cross him over before he did the shimmy. It was Jrue Holiday he crossed over. Jrue Holiday isn't in Milwaukee to give you 33 points. Jrue Holiday can give you 20 a night. But what he's supposed to be doing is being a lockdown defender. What happened to that guy? Especially when Giannis, who's also an all-defensive player, is on your team and PJ Tucker is on your team. What happened to you? And so I look at it from the perspective that I'm holding Jrue Holiday accountable for what happened with Trae Young yesterday as well. You don't get a pass. I appreciate the fact that you were hitting J's and that you were making up for the air balls that Pat Connaughton was shooting. I got that part. But the flip side to it is that your job description, how many times do I point to that, Molly? Job description, resume, signature. What is it that what is the expectation that comes along with you? If Jrue Holiday sat here yesterday, Max, and scored 21 points, but Trae Young also had 20-something, we would have went like this. The man did his job.
Mm-hmm.
We can't sit up there and say Jrue Holiday did his job because he scored 33.
That's what I'm saying. First of all, the Jet broke it down on the broadcast last night about the help defense not coming. And like you brought it up earlier. The reason Lopez is unplayable is because Trae kills you in the pick and roll, right? Like, so that discombobulates the defense. And your point is well taken about Jrue, but that's my point, Stephen A. The perennial all-stars, the guys who you say, that's a big three. For example, I think DeAndre Ayton has arrived there now.
Yep.
Game after game. So now you're going to have Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and DeAndre Ayton. That doesn't mean every single game they're going to be great, but you can rely on all three of them consistently to be great, to be excellent. That's not what the Bucks have. And you pointing it out about Jrue Holiday on the defensive end last night points it out. Holiday and Middleton are good players. Giannis needs a great player with him. He needs a crime partner. He still doesn't have it, and it is unclear at this moment if the advantage we thought the Bucks had coming into this series can compensate for that. We don't know that. This is any one series.
Yeah, I know is Young is torching folks, and he's having fun out there doing it. It looks like it's a rec game, like zero stress at all whatsoever, living his best life. What were you going to say, Stephen A.?
No, what I was going to say was that you can look at it that way, but, Max, if one of them shows up offensively, then that is a crime partner, whether it's Middleton or Jrue Holiday. But what they're supposed to be doing collectively is being more formidable defensively. That's about Budenholzer as well. This is why if they lose this series, I'm here to tell you right now, that the ownership in Milwaukee is going
to
take a strong, hard look
they
at Mike Budenholzer.
They have no choice.
They don't get to the finals because there's really no excuse. You can't have a guy 6'1", 180 pound, playing amongst those trees, being athletic and as formidable as they are defensively, giving up 48 points and being ran roughshod over. You can't have that.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't. They're going to have to look at him.
I know we got to go to break, but real quick, just while we're on the subject. So do you guys still have the Bucks winning the series regardless of last night?
I still do.
I do, Molly, but I got to tell you something right now. What I'm seeing from Atlanta and them hitting shots, I'm almost getting to a point where it wouldn't shock me if the Atlanta Hawks won the championship because they're making shots.
Yeah.
They're making shots. If they, sure. if somebody
Young's
can't stop them from making shots,
games these playoffs. Yeah.
If somebody can't stop them from making shots, because Bogdanovich, remember, he's got that knee issue. If he didn't have that knee issue and was able to push off, he would be shooting better. You see what Gallinari
Great
is doing.
Point.
You know what Lou Williams could do coming off the bench. And John Collins can ball.
John
he's
Collins
a, stud.
A stud.
They better
mm-hmm.
keep
he's
him.
A stud.
I'm telling you right now, but the Atlanta Hawks, I'm not picking them to win this series. Not yet. But the Atlanta Hawks could win the championship. They could do it.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Breaking news into First Take this morning. Rick Carlisle didn't have to wait long for a new job, fellas. Listen to this. Tim McMahon reporting. The Pacers are hiring Rick Carlisle as head coach. He will sign a 4-year deal, $29 million. Stephen A., what do you think about the Pacers picking up Carlisle?
Well, let me say this. I'm happy for him. You know, I've known Rick Carlisle for many years. I think he's an exceptional coach. I do think it was time for a new voice in Dallas. I think he knew that, which is why he departed. My personal opinion, I haven't had an opportunity to speak to him yet, Molly, about this, to congratulate him. Because him and his wonderful wife and his family, I know they love Indiana, and so that's great for him. But what I would tell you is that when I think about Rick Carlisle in Indiana, I actually had aspirations for him to end up in Milwaukee. I thought that if Budenholzer lost, that the perfect coach for Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks would have been Rick Carlisle. That was my personal opinion. I look at the roster. Even though I like Sabonis a lot, and you got Brogdon, who I'm a fan of, and Miles Turner, and now you got Caris LeVert, they've got some legitimate pieces on Indiana that can make some noise. But championship caliber noise, I don't know if I see that. It remains to be seen. So what happened? You know, when he coached them for 4 years, I think it was from 2003 to 2007, took them to the playoffs the first 3 years, the conference finals the first year, semifinals the second year. First round the third year, then obviously they missed the playoffs the fourth year. So you were sliding this way, but that's neither here nor there. In the end, it's a nice location for him. I can understand why he would take that job. I certainly understand why they are hiring him because he obviously used to coach there before and knows the town, knows the fan base, knows what it means to them, the whole bit, and he was an assistant under Bird there as well. It's a great choice by the Indiana Pacers. I just like to see my buddy in a better situation talent-wise in terms of having championship-caliber players. I like Brogdon a lot. I like Sabonis and all of them. Whether or not they can legitimately compete for a championship is my question mark about them right now.
Yeah, mine too. And it's an interesting choice for Rick Carlisle, Stephen A., who would seem to have options. You know, not only with, like, you look at the work with Dallas, right? But I always think of that Pistons team in 04 that Larry Brown took over and then they got Rasheed Wallace. And I always thought of it as a Rick Carlisle team because he was getting close. He's an excellent coach, probably the best coach in the history of, like, the Dallas Mavericks, right? Probably the best coach in franchise history, championship and everything. And the Pacers are the kind of team where, like, you look at the draft lottery and you think to yourself, at least I was thinking yesterday, there's a team that really needs to get lucky in the draft lottery because they're well run enough, at least they're successful enough, where they're normally not picking up at the top of the class, so they're not getting these great prospects. because they're not among the worst teams in basketball. But they're also not a free agent destination. It's not a warm weather city. It's not a major cosmopolitan destination. It's not a tax-free state where they're attracting top-notch free agents. So it's almost they're cursed by their own competence in a way. They're competitive and they're good enough to never be great. You would think Rick Carlisle would want a situation where there's potential greatness, but maybe he sees something in their near future that I don't.
Mm. Yeah, that's fair. Landed a job pretty quick. That's all I know, right?
But like I said, I know I'm on a personal level, so I'm really happy for him and his family because I know how much being in Indy meant to them. And, you know, he and I go back a long, long ways, and I know how much they love that area and what have you.
That's
so
great.
I think
right.
it was just as personal as much as it was professional.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Tommy Brady, he's got 7 Super Bowl rings and turns 44 in August, and it doesn't sound like he's slowing down. Teflon Tom has been in the news a lot lately, recently appearing in an episode of LeBron's show, The Shop, and last night appearing on The Late Late Show with James Corden. Take a listen to what he had to say.
It's hard to walk away from something that, you know, you still feel like you can do and you want to do. So
sure.
It's not about proving it to others
right.
what you could do. It's more about proving it to yourself. And I still feel like even though I'll be 44 this year, I still have a chance to still, you know, prove it to myself that I can still do it at 44 because I've really worked to a point where I can, you know, still do it at this age.
The most important promises are the ones you make to yourself. Brady, a little more in the public eye since leaving Foxborough. Kimberly Martin. Hey, lady, how we doing? It's been a minute since we've seen you.
Hello,
as well.
Hello, guys. Hello, Molly.
Good to see you. We will get to you in a minute. I'm going to start with Stephen A. Kimberly. What do you value more, Stephen A.? Would you say it's the Patriot way or is it the Brady way?
I was going to say it's the Brady way. That's what I value more. I mean, the reality of the situation is the Patriot way had a lot to do with him winning. But bottom line is he had a lot to do with the Patriot way being the Patriot way. So, you know, because he did things his way. And what I mean by that is his level of dedication, his focus, his zeal, his commitment to winning, to inspiring and galvanizing his teammates to maximize the potential that exists within all of them. That's a Brady way. That's not a Patriot way. And we saw that last year in Tampa Bay. He had something to do with that. The Patriot way comes from this, from winning. In other words, they won, so we just coined the phrase the Patriot way. But that's not what we were saying when they was gone. We weren't saying that. We were talking about Brady way. We were talking about TB12. We were talking about a dude that was supposed to be done. It was a cliff. Then it was a ravine. Then it was a combination of both. Before it was nothing. That's what we saw. Because Tom Brady is Tom Brady. And so for me, when I think about him, and his intestinal fortitude, his commitment to excellence, the fact that he never wavers in terms of his belief in himself, that it's always about the marathon, not the sprint, that it's about what happens at the end and who's holding that Lombardi trophy. To me, that's about Tom Brady. That ain't about the Patriot way, and I'll roll with that.
Well, Tom Brady is clearly having a good time now, going on The Shop and dropping expletives about other quarterbacks. Like, you want to stick with that expletive, right? And being more public-facing and showing more of his personality, which is certainly not the Belichick way, Patriot way. And the reason he and Belichick were such a good match was because a lot of guys have passion for the game, but their passion translated to preparation. They were both the most prepared. But I'm going to take that kind of preparation, that level of preparation, and call it the Patriot way, which Brady obviously had something to do with, but so did Belichick. Guys, the reason Brady can do this now at the age of 44, or last year 43, it's not just because of, you know, his avocado ice cream or whatever, you know, the way he takes care of his body and all that stuff. It's also because that's why he's still excellent. But it's also because he reached such legendary status that he could look around the league and say, I want to go to that team. Like a team that's totally ready to win if only they have a better quarterback. A team with a real good defense, an offensive line, skills position players everywhere you look, a good coach, everything. I want to go there. Right? That's, he was put in that position because of the Patriot way, because Tom Brady didn't play defense. And he didn't get to choose about, you know, what team he wanted to go to when he went to the Patriots, drafted where he was. That was Belichick, who was a defensive coordinator and Super Bowl champion defensive coordinator before he was ever a head coach. Those were Belichick's game plans and strategies, which, of course, he and Brady put his head, their heads together and were both very prepared. But that status is why he not only got to choose where he wanted to play for the most part, and it's a loaded team, but now all the veterans around the league. The way it is for LeBron when he joins a team. Hey, I'll play for less than I'll normally get. I'd like to stay with Tom Brady. That's why they could keep the whole team together. That Patriot way put him in a position to now do this. So I'm going to say the Patriot way.
All right, well, let me be the tiebreaker here because it's the Brady way. That's the only answer to this question. I'm sorry, Max, because the Brady way is the ultimate YOLO. I'm a bet on me. Show everybody I'm that dude. That is quintessential the Brady way. Because where else in the NFL have you seen a guy win multiple Super Bowls in one destination, and when he's discarded, say, you know what? All right, I'm gonna take my talents down to Florida and see what we can do there, and then come out of that situation and win another Super Bowl. At this age, nobody's done it. It is, now granted, nothing against Belichick, one of the greatest coaches ever, but the reason guys wanna take less money during the Patriot way, guys take less for the betterment of the team, it's because who's at quarterback? The same reason all the guys in Florida, in Tampa Bay, wanted to re-up and say, okay, we want to bring all 22 back. We want to run this back. It's because Brady is at the helm. So Belichick, great coach. But Tom Brady, and another thing, why is Tom Brady acting like he doesn't have anything to prove to anybody? His whole journey and story is about proving everybody wrong. So I'm not even buying what he's trying to tell the TV cameras. He knows he's the GOAT, and he's trying to make sure everybody knows it at the end of the day.
And who wouldn't want to do that? Who wouldn't want to emulate that?
Well,
exactly.
Right. I agree with what you said about Brady, but he was put in that position not only by himself, but also the team to which he was drafted and built by Belichick all those years. That's why he had the status and the gravitas where he could point to a team and he gets to play there. Why everyone else wants to play with him because they're playing with a legend. Now, he did come through, and did the COVID year have something to do with diminishing certain other teams? It doesn't matter because his team was exposed to all the same stuff everyone else was. I give him credit for that. Joe Montana didn't win a Super Bowl, but back in the day went to an AFC championship game right away with the Chiefs after he'd done all that, you know, in San Francisco, showing that, no, it's not just Walsh. It's also Joe Montana. And clearly Brady did that and then some. There's no two ways about that. You know, the fact of the matter remains he played two teams, one the Packers, who were having guys out on their offensive line, and then the Chiefs. Clearly, that wasn't the Chiefs, and he won the Super Bowl. It's to his credit, but to pretend that he wasn't put in that position by the team he played on is not honest.
Well,
he was put in that position because he was a six-time champion.
Can we retort?
Who's
because what
you?
Position was the Patriots in before Tom Brady arrived? I recall Drew Bledsoe being their quarterback. And he was the face of the franchise. And there were still huge question marks about what they were going to do. He gets injured after suffering a hit against the Jets. Tom Brady comes up in there. Drew Bledsoe comes back. But Bill Belichick says, no more. I'm not going away from this brother right here who happened to be Tom Brady. And Tom Brady guided them to a Super Bowl and a level of dominance of which we have never seen on an NFL level in the league's history. That's what we're seeing. So I get what you're talking about, Max, in terms of the Patriot way. My question would be, although we can't take anything away from the greatness of Bill Belichick, we also have to pay homage to the fact that Tom Brady has everything to do with the Patriot way. It wasn't something he adopted. It's something he created.
I think maybe
in concert with Bill Belichick, of course, but it's something he played a role in creating. And so because of that, that's why we have to pay attention to what's happening here in Tampa, because of people who want to come play for him, the sacrifices they're willing to make just to be a teammate of his. Let's see what Bill Belichick is able to do in New England without him.
What gets me about Max is he seems so unimpressed by what we just saw Tom Brady do. That is what is shocking to me. Mm-hmm. Because after what we saw in 2020, from COVID to them winning the Super Bowl, the Brady way is living your best life. All of a sudden, we see Brady has a personality. All of a sudden, we're seeing Brady, he's actually funny. He's a funny, funny, sarcastic dude. And all those years in Foxborough, we didn't get to see any of that. Why? Because the Patriot way was nobody say anything, nobody be in the locker room, nobody answer questions. Everybody just, this is what we're doing out here. And now Brady is in Tampa living it up and showing everybody that all along, while Belichick is great, this is to be that good. Imagine being able to go to a whole new team, no offseason prep. A GM and a head coach say, we still value you. What do you want? You want Gronkowski? Cool, we'll bring him in. You want AB? Cool, we'll bring him in. And that situation happens because Brady's at the center of it.
Yes, and Brady's at the center of it because of everything he's accomplished, mm-hmm. and a lot of that was Belichick. That's the point. If the question is, the Brady way or the Patriot way, and both those ways are extreme preparation and greatness. One is publicly facing, you can't have fun. And the other is public. Yeah, you can still have fun. I'm not going to argue that you can't have fun in front of the public sometimes in a way that Belichick doesn't like, and you can still win. But what we don't know is if you could have been doing that all along and still did what they did in New England, because Belichick did, like, Brady got to just choose a team. And the team was loaded to the point where they won 7 games with a quarterback who threw 30 interceptions the year before. So, and then they added Antonio Brown and Gronk. I mean, they were loaded both
and
sides of the ball.
He earned that.
There's no argument against that, Molly. You're absolutely right.
You know, and in New England, free agents clamor to play with Bill Belichick, and he earned that as well. They both have. Kimberly, always good to see you, my dear. We will talk to you soon. Thank you.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. It's comeback season. Odell Beckham Jr. posted this video yesterday of him flying on a treadmill just 8 months after surgery on that torn ACL. His former teammate Saquon Barkley, also trying to come back from an ACL injury, posted video of himself sprinting on the field. Odell hoping to add to a stacked roster that made the playoffs in 2020. Saquon coming back to my G-men who missed the playoffs by a game last season. Max, who's going to have the bigger impact in their return? This is a great question.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's actually Odell Beckham Jr. because they're at a higher leverage moment in Cleveland than in New York. I'll let Saquon Barkley to you, Stephen A. I think he's the greatest running back prospect in the history of football. 2,000 yards from scrimmage as a rookie. You get into all to his importance. But Odell Beckham is joining a team. Look at this. This is Steve Austin. This is a $6 million man after the surgery. Look at this. It's unbelievable. Odell Beckham Jr. is as talented as anyone ever at the position, right? Like, he is just incredibly talented. And he's joining a team that barely lost to the Chiefs, you know? I mean, like, this is a real good double-digit win team that is predicated on the running attack. They have the best offensive line in football last year, according to PFF, graded number one, blocking for the run and protecting the passer. Number one in both almost never happens. Mm-hmm. They have a tremendous two-headed running attack. And they have receivers and a real defense. But they were lacking that take-the-lid-off-the-defense crazy number one receiver. Now, Odell and Baker have not had chemistry yet, Stephen A., but I'll tell you what, Odell's at the point of his career where he knows there can't be any slip-ups. He can't mess around. He can't be complaining if they're winning. He simply has to fit in. And a fully motivated and ready Odell Beckham Jr., willing to fit into an offensive scheme that's already this close to a Super Bowl, that has more impact than almost anyone in the league.
Well, you can look at it that way, and I can respect where you're coming from. I just think that with the greatness of Odell Beckham Jr. comes a demand that cannot be fulfilled by Baker Mayfield and won't be fulfilled by Kevin Stefanski. You got teammates that they can rely upon, a stout running game with Chubb and Hunt. You've got, obviously, Landry, and obviously they've addressed their tight end situation. And so I look at Cleveland having a multitude of pieces. And as a result of that, I'm of the mindset that that's not necessarily going to work for them. I think that Odell Beckham Jr., and by the way, that phone is not me. That's some ESPN folks calling up in there. I don't know what the hell that is. But
it's
anyway.
Okay. It's a busy day at ESPN.
That's right. The point is that I don't see that happening.
You're about to break news.
I think when you look at the New York Giants, it's a different ballgame. And the reason why I feel it's a different ballgame is because, look, Joe Judge, I think, has done a hell of a job thus far. You got Saquon Barkley coming back. You got Galladay in the offseason, along with Slayton and those boys. I just look at the Giants right now in the NFC least, and having a guy like Saquon Barkley back can really turn the tables for them. With Odell Beckham Jr., you're worried about what he may take away. With Saquon Barkley, you know that's an additive right now. Now, Odell Beckham Jr. needs to be with an all-world quarterback, the Aaron Rodgers of the world and others. That's where I'd like to see for him. I'm not trying to throw any shade on him whatsoever because I know that he's elite. It's just that you're going to be thinking about how to fit him in. With Saquon Barkley, you're talking about his presence, taking the ball out of Daniel Jones' hands a little bit more, which is a beautiful thing. And with the job that Joe Judge has already proven he can do, as far as I'm concerned, as an NFL head coach, I like the impact of Saquon Barkley being more profound than that of Odell Beckham Jr.
All right. Fair enough. Chris Paul, guys, listed as probable for Game 3 after being in COVID protocols for Games 1 and 2. CP3 trying to get to the finals for the first time in his career. On the other side, the Clippers also trying to get their first finals ever, but will be without star Kawhi Leonard again. Stephen A., is tonight a bigger game for the Clippers as a franchise or Chris Paul in terms of his legacy?
Max, could you go first on this, please? I'd like to hear what you have to say.
I'm happy to. This is another great question because there are good answers on both sides. I'm taking the Clippers. This is a bigger game for the Los Angeles Clippers than for Chris Paul. Do you understand? They've never played in a finals in their franchise's history. Never. Not once. The Clippers, if they go down 0-3, Stephen A., having now lost at home, if they lose this game, it's over. If they can win, if they can scratch out a win at home without Kawhi, even in the face of Chris Paul's return, and Kawhi comes back, and look, it doesn't look good, right? But if he does, Kawhi gets back and they're down 2-1, they can still win this series with the comeback hit at coach, right? With Ty Lue at coach. They can still do it. If they lose, it's over. And Stephen A., this is their window. We keep saying it's the Clippers' window, closes, closes. Everyone's going to, Kawhi can opt out. This whole thing could fall apart right when LeBron and AD come back next year. And goodbye, Clippers. I don't even know if they could stay in Los Angeles after that. This is the biggest game in the history of the Clippers franchise.
I disagree with you. I think it's Chris Paul. It's a bigger game for Chris Paul. Let me throw the shade out on the Clippers for a second here. You already made it to the conference finals for the first time in franchise history. And Kawhi Leonard is gone. I think everything that you just said, Max, is applicable if Kawhi Leonard was healthy. But with Kawhi Leonard being out, unfortunately, you have a built-in excuse of not ultimately winning it all because Paul George and Kawhi Leonard there together wasn't able to get it done. That's a different ballgame. But with Kawhi Leonard out, you know, one of the top five players in the game, who's clearly a superstar talent in terms of what he brings to the table along with his championship pedigree. That's the reality of the situation. And I think when you look at it from that perspective, that sort of shreds or dissipates significantly the level of pressure that's applied to the Clippers. Don't get swept, but in the same breath, as long as you're competitive and you're competitive without Kawhi Leonard, at the end of the day, we're able to say they got to the conference finals for the first time in franchise history. In the case of CP3, this is the closest he's ever been to a championship. Now, I know you would say Houston, but that was James Harden's team. Chris Paul was there, but it was still James Harden's team. This is CP3's team. Phoenix is rolling. They've got a 2-0 lead in the Western Conference Finals. They're two games away from his first ever trip to the NBA Finals. And a slew of injuries, which is what derailed him throughout his career, has now happened to other people. And so because that is the case, all right, when you look at this Phoenix squad who won two games without him, if they come back and they lose with him and he doesn't get to the NBA Finals this year, he's going to be frowned upon even more than the Los Angeles
Clippers. I think he's played in a – or he had a bigger game once upon a time in a game seven against the Golden State Warriors where injury precluded him.
That was the first round game. That was the first round game, yeah.
All I know is it's must-see. It's on ESPN tonight. It's going to be another nap espresso day. Back to our top story. Trae Young, 48.7 rebounds, 11 assists, pulling off the upset on the road. But how does he compare to Luka Doncic? Max, over the next 5 years, who are you taking? Are you going Trae Young or are you going Luka?
I'm going Luka. And this is the point Stephen A. usually makes. You know, you have one guy who's a little over 6 feet and one guy who's 6'8", and they're both great. Take the 6'8" dude. Know why? The basket's 10 feet in the air. Luka has a chance to be the best player in basketball before too long. In fact, even KD played out of his mind, right? And so I don't think Luka, you have to like the way KD played last, better even than the way Luka played last. But, like, Luka's one of those guys where if LeBron's crown is in dispute because he got hurt and we don't know, Luka's one of the guys in the conversation right now. Is Trey? I don't think quite. I like Luka.
I don't blame you for that, but I would say to you, we can't summarily dismiss the notion that Trae Young ain't worth that either. Numbers are similar in the postseason, and here's the advantage that Trey does have, Max. He doesn't have baggage. Luka, officiating, tied. I forgot who was with for most technicals in the league this year. You got that going on. You got a coach in Rick Carlisle that walked away from Luka Doncic. You got a general manager that was there for 24 years that's no longer there. And you're hearing rumblings about how problematic Luka Doncic can be. Now, I don't know about this. Mark Cuban has tried to dismiss it, but clearly where there's smoke, there's fire, because he's going to have a new GM and a new head coach next season. So that's not an accident. Not to mention the fact that if you have something like that going on and you have players that don't necessarily want to play with you because you created a culture that people ain't adapting to.
Yep.
And in the meantime, Trae Young doesn't have that issue because they ain't giving him nothing but love. Then that's a different ballgame that's worth considering as well. But I would go with Luka too for now. But I wouldn't summarily dismiss Trae Young because the numbers are similar. And brother's special.
Yeah, good options to have. All right, let's keep it rolling here. So we know Stephen A. is one of the hardest working men in sports media, right? And we want to make sure that he has a great time when he travels. It's a running joke on the show, Stephen A.'s travel plans. It's all in fun. Listen to us on Tuesday.
Well, Stephen A., I'm worried about these destinations that you possibly have to go to for the NBA Finals. I mean, do you really want to be in Milwaukee?
There is breaking news here. I don't believe either of them are going to win their respective series, but I don't believe I've ever rooted for Atlanta, the Atlanta Hawks, and the Los Angeles Clippers more in my life. I don't believe I've done it. I don't believe I've ever rooted for them more in my life. That is true. That is true.
All right. Well, Milwaukee was listening to us. Bucks president Peter Fagan offering us a tour of the city. Let me just say this. Milwaukee, a great city, great people, passionate fan base that supports their teams rally together. They deserve a winner, and they may have a championship in these Bucks. So I would like to take up Peter Fagan on the tour. Dear District, here I come. I'd love to go. Stephen A., I know you agree with a lot of this, but I want to know, is there anything that you would like to add?
I'd like to add that I want the city of Milwaukee to grow the hell up. Stop being so damn sensitive. Let me be very, very clear. The arena, Fiserv Arena, is a first-class arena. That's what the Milwaukee Bucks franchise needed in order for them to stay in that city. Because if they hadn't built the new arena, the owners were going to leave and the NBA was going to force them to leave, okay? That's a matter of record, all right? The fans there, outstanding. Great fan base, great people. I got a lot of friends there. One of my best friends is Gary D. Howard, the former executive sports editor for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for damn near 2 decades there. One of the first things I did when I went to his house is I said, what the hell are you doing here? Why would you be here? It's freezing. I said nothing about the people. I said nothing about the fans. I said nothing about the arena, which is first class. They got this kind of L.A. Live Midwest feel there. That's absolutely fantastic. I was given a tour of that place. It was beautiful. The fans, the fan base, the quality of their team, all of that stuff is first class. And I love the people. And I got friends within the Milwaukee Bucks organization. But forgive me. If I don't like cold weather, I've spoken against Chicago. I've spoken against Minneapolis. I said, I asked my boy, in his church, I said, how could you do that to them? Having them in freezing behind Minneapolis, okay? Everybody knows that. I've spoken against cold weather cities all the time, and damn it, I ain't apologizing, and I'm not changing. I never said anything against the city, and you got these reporters and other people getting all caught up in their emotions. Because I don't like cold weather, I spoke against Detroit, too, because of the cold. I don't like cold weather.
Oh, I can tell
and
you,
I'm not
Stephen
apologizing
and Molly,
for it.
Both of you, as a native Milwaukeean, is that what it's called? I grew up on the corner of Pete Vukovich Boulevard and Ray Allen Way. My father, the brewmeister, showed me at his work what I needed to do to be successful in Milwaukee, and I've made it all the way to First Take, and I won't let you besmirch my city's name.
Yes, never
it's
meant
cold.
To offend. We never meant
that's
to offend
all.
Anybody. It's just
gray
a joke that Stephen A. likes Miami and California. That's really what it is. So,
cold.
Our apologies. And I'm going on that tour.
You do that.